Sure, Thomas, Rio 3.
Had you been to Amritsar before?
Yes, I've been to Amritsar. To have my eyes tested. But the when I got there, everything seemed to be very quiet. Not usually, as it usually was, busy. Everything seemed to be strange. And when I came to inquire about the eye specialist, I was just informed that he'd left. He left for home. So I simply just turned around and made back for Lahore, same day. And I thought, I kept thinking to myself, there isn't many on the trains, there isn't many people on the platform. It seems strange somehow. However, I got back to Lahore and reported back. And then early next morning, stand two went. The reporter came through writing, very bad writing at Amritsar. And communications had been cut off. The only aeroplane that was in the place, they only had one aeroplane at that time, sent it over. They reported back at the place was in flames. However, what had happened, the natives had rioted, set fire to the churches, the banks, looted the banks, and anyhow, we were got ready as soon as ever, as early as possible, to go to Amritsar.
Did people know why the Indians had rioted?
Did they know? Well, it was political, you see, really. Mahatma Gandhi and Mr. Besant was all on the go at that time, agitating for independence and what have you. And of course, as I say, the war had finished then, that it was 1919, you see. And what it isn't these political people that causes the trouble, it's the loot wallers who follow them. They follow the mob and do the looting. As I say, there was very few troops in the Punjab at all at that time, because men wanted to get home. There were very few regular troops left. What was left was the same as those who were volunteers for the Great War, who had been stranded. But however, they mobilized us and we set off for Amritsar. And when we got there, it was just coming in the evening. And when we got to Amritsar station, the place was full of civilians. Men armed with all shotguns, anything they could get hold of. Women and children. And all that was guarding them were about a half a dozen Gurkhas who were on the way home to Nepal on leave. And the train happened to come in to Amherst at the time, and they held the station while we got there. But it was just like a proper siege.
They were being attacked.
Yes, the mob was waiting to get at them. They would have got at them had it not been for the Gurkhas who were there. But we got there and we camped outside Amritsar city, the old city. And General Dyer, he was in a bit of a quandary because all he had was this handful of British troops and Indian troops. And he didn't know really what was going to happen. Were the Indian troops, were they going to mutiny or were they not going to? It was in the lap of the gods. And he warned us about this. He said, well, we may have a mutiny, another Indian mutiny on our hands.
How did he tell you?
Well, just as it happened, I was what was called a runner. That was to carry messages from the headquarters to the battalion headquarters, the different commanders, see? And but he used to move among the troops, the Dyer, see? He used to move personally among the troops. Moreover, what he did, every morning, he got the troops and we marched through Mysore City, entered through the North Gate, through the city, and then back again, just as a show of strength. But all the time that you were going forward, there was a mob about 20 yards in front of you, shouting and yelling, throwing anything they could get hold of.
And were you just marching?
We just kept marching on.
Bayonets on?
Yes, we fixed bayonets, of course. But we were warned not to do anything to provoke anything, you see. This went on three or four days, and then it came, they got word at the end of the week that there was going to be a big rally outside the city, and Mr. Besant Gandhi was going to give the political speeches, and they expected trouble. And so troops were sent into the city at different points, and I was on headquarters in the centre of the city at the Indian troops were on the southern gate where the mob was expected to enter if they came into the city, if they attacked the city at all, that's where they would come in. But the Indian troops and the British troops was behind them. And the orders were that if they were pushed, they must fire over their heads. and was on no account fire unless they were really pushed. Or, however, this particular morning, they got word the mob was making for the city. And then we had the firing started. And we really didn't know at the headquarters what was happening. But what had happened was that there was that many of them, there was thousands of them, that simply overrun the troops, that the only defense they had was to fire. And they were packed that close that one bullet would probably kill in two or three persons. Eh? But I never had one of our people ever say that the British troops had fired. The Indian troops had fired, because they were forward, and nobody could blame them. They were the first target with the Indian troops. They would have caught the brunt had they been overrun. They were the people who would have caught it. Anyhow, it finished up. It was proper slaughter. I don't know. I think it was estimated with 200 killed and 400 wounded, something in that region.
What did the soldiers think of that?
What did the soldiers?
What did they think of that?
Well, it was the only thing that they could do. If you have a frenzied mob coming at you out for blood, you have your protection. You outnumbered 100 to 1. You have a rifle. The only thing you can do is fire it for your own protection. And that's what had happened. See? But the trouble is that it's the looters who cause the trouble. The people who are out for what they can get. Not the political people. It's the others, the hangers-on. Eh? They're the people that cause the trouble. And there's no doubt about it. The bulk of them who got killed, I think, they were the bulk of these people who'd come for what they could get out of it, out of the job, the looting. But after that, things quietened down at Amritsar. And we had word there was a bit of trouble at our own station, Lahore. So back to Lahore we went. And we very nearly had the same there.
What's happened?
Well, you see, in these towns, you get the old world cities where the bulk of the native population live. And then outside, you get the cantonments, where the Europeans live, where the Anglo-Indians, half-castes, as you might call them, where they live. They're mostly the clerks, that kind of people are educated Indians, see? They live in their own cantonments, outside the cities, see? Well, the barracks, they're about 4 miles away from the city. And these cantonments, in between the old city and the barracks. Well, they got word to say there was a mob coming up from the city, just the same as Amritsar, only on not such a large scale. And I sent a platoon of men down to meet them. 3 rows men, one prone on the ground, another on kneeling, the other standing. And the orders were, when they get in about 30, 40 yards, fire one volley over the heads. Not to fire, on no account, to fire into them. To fire over the heads. And not to fire at all until you absolutely, it was essential that you must do so. And so, I waited. And this mob came up in the city. And there was an officer there on a horse, and he was there, supposed to be giving orders like, and this mob came up, and they took no notice, and the order was given. Fire one round over the hedges. I fired one round, and it was different to Amritsar because there was more room. In Amritsar, they were blocked in narrow streets. At Lahore, it was more open. There were these cantonments where the gardens, the cantonments, were at the sides of the road, so people could that room to spread. But I expect that the natives would think this is another Amritsar. Eh? And they stopped. they stopped, and the troops advanced and they dispersed. And they quietened down. Or else it would have been Amritsar over again at Lahore. Well, there you are.
Was everybody relieved?
Everybody was very relieved. there we were in on for the back end of 1919, and the war had finished, and people had forgotten about it. We were still in India, in the thick of it. But however, a time did come, and we were moved down to a big camp, not so many miles from Bombay, Doolally. It was a big camp. It was really built for disembarking Asians for troops, because there was those South African troops, those all mixing manners of troops, they came from all over the place. And they were sent to Doolally and then dispersed as boats came into Bombay and sent home. But you had to be very careful at Doolally. At least little thing you'd done, you got on a charge, that was it. You once got separated from your unit, you never rejoined it again. Eh? You had to be very, very careful. But we did eventually get away, and when we left Bombay, I believe it was the Empress of Africa, something of that kind of thing. It was a mail boat we came home on, but looking back for it, to Bombay, we were all very, very relieved. Why? But it was, we landed home Christmas 1919. Award finished 1918. That was my experience of the First Great War. No. No. No, I never got... No, you never got any leave at all. It was... Well, of course, the old regular troops, I don't think they ever did. See, and of course we were put on the same footing as the regular troops. And I must say this, the civilian population, they treated us the same as the regular troops. As far as they were concerned, we were muck. They never socialized or fraternized with you in any way. Not with the troops. They may have done with the officers, but not with the troops. Eh? And of course, that's how it used to be in the olden days with the regular soldiers. See? And of course, we'd followed on, and because they wouldn't realize that we weren't really soldiers, we were only civilians dressed up as soldiers. Eh? But and we were never in. You were never invited anywhere. The friendliest people were the Eurasians, as what is commonly known as half-castes. But the Eurasians, I met some really nice people among them. What became of them afterwards, after we left India? Because there was all communities of them. See? and of course, they were neither Indian nor European. They were really a sect of their own, on their own. So what became of them when Pakistan and India split up? I can never get to know. Yeah? Because there'd be hundreds of thousands of them.
Did they used to invite invite you back to their house or to parties?
Just one or two. There was one or two who had the better paid jobs, such as engineers. See, I can only remember two, three at the outside, whoever invited us into the home, but never European until after the riots. And during the riots, of course, they were all added into the barracks for protection. And then when things quietened down, they kind of supposed to give us a reception as thanks for the protection we'd given them, of course. And that is the only time that ever were invited. And as far as that goes, you would hardly credit this, but there was a family. He was a railway engineer, mention no names, came from the same town, same street, lived in Lahore,